You are listening to WWBC Coco, Merritt Island, 1510 AM, as well as W234BI Coco, Rockledge, 94.7 FM, W264AS, Rockledge, Melbourne, Palm Bay, Indy Atlantic, Indian Harbor Beach, Satellite Beach, 100.7 FM, and W260CL Coco, 99.9 FM.
Hello, space and treasure coast. This is Sita Begee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, right here in the beautiful sunny Coco, Florida. We are heard on AM 1510 WWBC, FM 94.7, 99.9, 100.7, and on the World Wide Web, all over God's magnificent planet where people have internet.
That's exactly right. And Artemis 1 is going to make sure that every place in the world has internet, I understand. Hope that goes up on Tuesday, tomorrow. But yes, on 1510wwbc.com, you can find all of our shows that are there right on the website. Also on CETA Media Inc., which is our personal website for Viewpoint with CETA and Friends. And then, of course, we share everything on our Facebook pages as well, which CETA posts. So CETA Durgin, and also Viewpoint with CETA and Friends. So it's great. You find us everywhere. And if you Google CETA now, she's world famous.
Oh, my God.
World famous.
you know what? For our listeners who are just tuning into Viewpoint with CETA and Friends, we have a packed studio today. My very good friend, and actually a mentor of mine, someone that I look up to very, very daily, someone who put the V in volunteering.
Yeah,
Marianne Ambrose is here, and we are going to be chatting a little bit about Green Gables. It's an historic home that was built in 1896 right here in Melbourne, Florida. It's a Queen Anne architect style, and it's on the Indian River, and I love it, and I love that Miriam is here. So thank you for coming here today with us.
Thank you for having me.
Joining us in studio, Ellen O'Neill is here. She, as usual, is my co-host, and our resident guest, of course, Allie Tambor is here. Hi, Allie.
Hello.
I'm so glad you're learning so much from Marianne about Green Gables today.
Oh, yes, me too. This is exciting. I want to go over there right now.
Yes, yes, yes. And Ellen, we missed you last week. The show goes on with Danny. Of course, thank you for producing and helping our show, Danny. The show went on. We did really well, but we did miss you. So I hope you had a good time with your friend.
Yeah, I did. We're going to go guitar shopping, I think, tomorrow. So we're going to skip all of our stuff till Tuesdays.
I mean, what would we do in this planet without friends, right? I mean,
yes.
God puts people in our lives at various times that become your family, right? I mean, like Green Gables, all those ladies are friends, right?
Absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely.
So we're going to be chatting in a little bit with our friend Marianne Ambrose, and we're going to talk about all the great things that are happening at Green Gables. I have to say, yay, we did it. Right?
Absolutely.
We did. It
seemed like
it
such a long haul because you guys were on the show, what, 5 years ago?
That was the beginning of
right?
the turnaround.
Yes. Yes. And for
that's
our listeners who are tuning in, we sit here every Monday. We've been doing this show for 13 years. The show Viewpoint with CETA and Friends has become part of our life. It's part of our community. We like to give back to our community in a very kind, loving, informative, unscripted, and very educational manner as well. We speak to people on our show who are authors, lawyers, engineers, scientists, God, my goodness, the business community, financial literacy, people running for office. And today's no different. We'll be speaking with Marianne Ambrose on the second segment. The first segment, I found a gentleman, of course, on Facebook, and I saw his ad, and he's running for city council in the Atlantic, Florida. His name is Mel Chang, and I thought I would invite him to come on the show. Someone else was supposed to come on this morning, and I don't know what happened, and Mel was very kind to step up to the plate and said, I'll call in. So I think he's on the phone. So Mel, by the mere simple fact that you took the chance to call in, it tells me a lot about your character. So good morning, good afternoon, actually, and thank you for calling in on Viewpoint with CETA and Friends.
Hi, CETA, Mel Chang here. Thank you for inviting me.
Well, thank you for answering the phone and taking our calls. And, you know, a lot of people wake up and they have that aha moment and they say, well, I'm going to run for office. whether it's local office or state or national, something somewhere happened and a person says, I can do better, or I can make a change, or I see something, maybe it's infrastructure, maybe it's education, maybe it's socioeconomic justice, whatever it is, people say, I'm going to run for office. So Mr. Mel Chang, tell us a little bit about yourself and why you decided to run for city council.
Well, thank you. To start off, I've had a lifetime of service. I served in the military for 21, almost 22 years in the intelligence and special operations community. And upon retiring from that, I went into the venture capital community. And again, it's selfless service to helping businesses start, grow, and become prosperous and produce products or services for the greater United States.
Well, my friend Ellen O'Neill is busy Googling and checking out all this stuff you're saying already, so we will be doing what we can to help you get elected. So what is it like for you to throw your hat in the ring and decide to run for city council? There has to be pros and cons, right? So tell us a little bit about, you know, what it is like for you right now at this moment.
The pros of the campaign are I am running on the same platform. Basically, I ran last time when I ran for mayor. And quite honestly, I've been quite successful. The previous mayor, has stepped down. So I consider that a win, even though it wasn't during my tenure in running for mayor. But he is vacating the office, and we have a new mayor stepping in, Mark McDermott. And I hope that he brings a lot of change, positive change to the community. I'm going to probably be on that same bandwagon with him. I want to bring positive change. I want to bring structure to the fiscal responsibility and accountability in the community. And as everybody else in the Melbourne area is doing, there's growth. What I'm looking for is not just growth, but sustainable growth and growth stabilization, where we can grow smartly and have our infrastructure outpace our growth to a certain extent. So we're not playing catch up and having to take bonds and other instruments out to play catch up with our infrastructure.
Yeah, I mean, in the Atlantic, I lived in Satellite Beach in Tortoise Island for a long time, and in the Atlantic is growing, but I do notice there's a little bit more congestion, it's a bit more crowded. What do you think that you could make a difference with that as a city council member?
I believe I could, but it's not going to just be myself working. It's going to have to be concerted group working with the FDOT. Because one of the main thoroughfares in hurricane season especially is the 192 bridge, Melbourne Bridge, coming out of the southbound, anywhere from Sebastian Inlet through O'Galley will be exiting through this causeway. And it goes right through our city. Now, because it's a hurricane preparedness sort of infrastructure, we need to work with FDOT and other state agencies to make sure that people and other avenues to evacuate people during the hurricane.
Yeah, I see Allie changing. Allie's shaking her head here. You want to jump in there, Allie?
Yeah, it's a scary decision just to whether you're going to evacuate or not. Is it worth it to try to stay? But those bridges are scary all by themselves. You can see that they've been working on the O'Galley one a bit, but it needs to ensure that we can get safe passage when we're in dire straits like possibly this week.
Yes, that's right. That's right. So so tell us a little bit. So you're running for city council in the Atlantic. When is the election? Do you have a website, and where can people meet you?
Yes. The election is on November 8th, and it's downtown right here at Presbyterian Church. You can come down and vote in person. I believe early voting starts around October 23rd, 24th for early voting. My website is www.melvinchangcampaign.com, and you can also look me up on Facebook at Chang for Change.
Right.
Oh, that's clever.
Yeah, that is very good. So most people who run for office, they want to accomplish certain things. As a city council member, what are your three top things that you want to accomplish when you win the seat?
My priority for this seat is the constituent. I think because there has been a preponderance of people that have held office for so long, that new fresh thinking needs to be implemented, and with that comes a lot of change. So that's my number one priority, is the constituent and representing them with transparency. My second priority is public safety. As with everybody else in the greater Melbourne area, everybody's growing, and in order to affect positive change with that growth, public safety becomes an issue, whether it's fire, EMS, or police law enforcement. So that's my number two priority. My number three priority, again, is a combination of fiscal responsibility and growth sustainment and stability.
Wow. Well, I know that you also volunteer for a few things here in town, and I'm just going to put in a plug. Our second guest today is our friend Marion Ambrose with the historic Green Gables Village. I don't know if you've heard of Green Gables, but I just wanted to ask you, you know, so our listeners on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends would get to know you a little bit better. What sort of volunteering stuff are you doing here in town and serving in our city?
The only thing I really do here in the Atlantic, and it's a greater cause than just going down and doing a 5K support or something like that. I am part of a network of suicide prevention sanctuaries, I would say, for veterans coming back from either Afghanistan or Iraq or any other campaign that the United States has undertaken. So one of the things I do here is my house is a sanctuary in that network, where I've had veterans that have wanted some downtime to just talk or go fishing or to walk on the beach, swim in the pool. And this is all pretty much on my as a benefactor for the Wounded Warriors program. When they stay here, it's room and board for free, and all the other service activities are also free.
That's awesome. Ellen, we are going to put your information on our website so people could, you know, check you out, use Dr. Google and find out some more things about you. But one of the things that we see here in Melbourne and in the Atlantic and Satellite Beach and actually in Florida is, you know, a lot of the citizens, they want to be involved in the decision-making in the process of their town or their cities. How do you plan to involve more citizens in getting involved?
What I'd like to accomplish as a council member is something I've used in the past, where what we call fireside chats. And it's bi-monthly or twice a month. I would have a meet and greet down, let's say, at Indy Atlantic Coffee, which is a great small business here, or Surfanita is another great small business. We have Starbucks 2 minutes from my house, another great business. And I would hold a half an hour in the morning, come as you are, let's discuss grassroots issues that you're facing and come up with some solutions generated from the public. And then taken forward to the board or the council and administration so that they could probably grasp some of the issues that aren't brought to the surface during council meetings. And that's the second thing I like to do, is get more people to show up at council meetings for both the positive and for the negative parts of it.
You know, if you serve curry chicken and rice, and you throw in a little...
It's magic.
It's magic. They show up.
It's magic.
I'm telling
There's
you...
There's something in the curry. I'm not quite sure what it is.
Somebody called me the other day, and they're like, you know, every time you post your food, I want to get on a flight, and I want to come to Florida, and I just want to eat. And I said, all right, then. Well, come on down. But, I mean, you're right. You know, like the young people, you know, the young people have a lot to offer. They have great ideas, and they don't get involved. So, how, I mean, Starbucks is a start, but, I mean, what else can we do? I mean, we're watching so many of our youths spend quality time on social media. They're on TikTok. They're on Instagram. They're on, you know, Facebook, wherever it is. How do we get more young people to actually show up and not just listen to a fireside chat or join you at Starbucks, but actually register to vote and care about a community? I think that that's a challenging thing.
It is. It is. I haven't put it too much thought to that. I do a lot. My kids ask me out quite a bit to go with them to concerts with their friends and whatnot. And I find the generation gap between, I'm 63 now, between myself in the 30s and the 20s, quite disparate. However, the values are still there. They still want to have a good time. They still want to participate. They still want to have law enforcement do their job and not overexert themselves. They still want friendly people to address them with respect, even though they're younger. And I think that can all culminate if we do have, you know, those fireside chats or the morning breakfast meetings. I used to have that quite a bit when I was in Virginia. I mean, we'd all, as business men, we'd meet in the morning over coffee, and we'd talk about issues in the city, and we'd invite a council member to our coffee morning out, and we'd switch council members every now and then, and we'd talk about different issues that as businessmen we face, not only as businessmen, but as fathers and grandfathers and people in the community.
Well,
I'd like to implement some of that here.
That, I mean, you know, what you're saying is actually what parents should be doing at home, right? Parents and elders and grandparents is sitting down, not every single day, people don't have time, but maybe once a week or once a month, and talk about student loans and talk about education and talk about how to treat teachers and talk about mortgages and talk about rentals and investing. And you find that people are not taking the time to teach the younger ones. And so they go out and they get all the information from someone else. I mean, how can we, us, all of us, you're running for office. I'm a nurse. Marion is a teacher. Ellen is in business. Allie's retired. And, you know, we're all doing what we can to help. But I feel like that's one of the things that's lacking in this beautiful United States is communication.
I agree with you. I agree with you. One of the things that I'd like to see more of is agree to disagree and be respectful. Just because somebody doesn't have the same thought process or the same values as far as I want this to get accomplished, you may have a different view of that, but respect that person's opinion, and you can always turn off the volume. There's nothing that says you have to turn the volume up. You can always tone it down or turn it off.
Yeah, and I think that's you hit on a very important point. I think anyone who throw their hat to run for office, whether it's a nonpartisan race, whether it's a Republican, a Democrat, whatever, people do need to just listen and show respect, because that person is putting their life on hold to give back to the community. And they do expect others to, you know, volunteer in their campaign, maybe contribute, but most importantly, listening is, it costs nothing. It's free. Just listen to the candidate, and you don't have to take the guy or the lady home for curry chicken and rice, but you could still listen to them and show respect.
That is true. That is true. And, you know, there's an old saying that you have two ears and one mouth. And I subscribe to that as a candidate, and I would subscribe to that as a council member. I'd like to listen more and talk less.
Oh, that's something that everybody should do. So for our listeners who are tuning in, we're speaking with Mr. Mel Chang, and he is a candidate for City Council in the Atlantic, right here in Florida, in Brevard, actually.
And historically, in the Atlantic has been a very involved community. You know, our friend Brooke, I mean, her family has got a long-standing history in Indy Atlantic specifically. And all of the business people in Indy Atlantic as well are just so supportive of their community, supportive of public schools, supportive of each other. You know, it's a very neighborhood-friendly
community. And they got a new police station.
They do, yeah.
Which I like a lot.
So I've always been very impressed. So congratulations, Mel, for putting your hat in the ring and taking over such a great community that can just get better.
Yes. So well, Mr. Go ahead. You could thank my Ellen. She just adds so much. Go ahead.
So, Ellen?
Yes.
That is one of the, I'd like to make a correction there. Indian Harbor Beach recently acquired and moved into their new police station, which is, I think, on Riverside.
Right. That was
Yeah, that was me.
Yeah, because she lived down that way. She lived closer down that side.
Indy Atlantic houses their police department in the town center. What I proposed as a council member is to have Indy Atlantic occupy its own site, have its law enforcement occupy its own site. And there are ways that we can get that done with minimal impact to raising taxes in the Atlantic.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be great if they could have a standalone site. I knew that. Sorry, I'm the one who said about the police station. But so, Mel, if elected, what three things can you do to put the city of Indy Atlantic on a firmer financial footing? Because we're watching, there's a lot of businesses in Indy Atlantic, but of course, rent is high. A lot of businesses are moving out. People are having difficulty finding help to work for them. But financially, what can you do to make the city, you put it in a firmer position?
Well, it's not only financially. I think it's a greater picture than that. There are three approaches that I take. I was a former CEO of a venture capital firm, and we took things, in my view, I took things three separate ways. One was strategic, meaning the long picture. Second, was it sustainable? How long will we be able to sustain where we're going, and how fast will we get there? The third one is scalable. And that means how do we adjust depending on the financial situation, the economic situation, the laws in the country, how they change, whether they're business laws, civic laws, criminal laws, they all affect how we do business as a government and how we act as a community. So my approach to anything that we're going to do in the future is strategic, sustainable, and scalable. If we use those three tenets, we can accomplish quite a bit.
You know what? I'm so glad that you answered that telephone this morning, because we are hearing some great things from you. And I really hope and pray people get registered to vote. They vote early. They vote by mail. They show up to vote for you, because we do need people in office that can listen, that can that have the experience to lead, and are willing to lead for all, not just the ones who vote for them. But we have a couple of minutes left, and I wanted to ask you, what is your favorite place in the town of Indy Atlantic? Where do you spend most of your time?
My favorite place is Surfinista. It is a little boutique for breakfast. They have some of the greatest bowls for breakfast, some of the greatest yogurts. Coffee is great. The atmosphere is absolutely fantastic. It's walking distance to the beach. And I like it because it's walking distance from my house. And it allows me to walk down the road, talk to residents. I talk to quite a few residents on my way, whether I'm running for office or I'm not, just being neighborly. And going there, I see people both from Indy Atlantic, people coming as far away as what's that place up there? It's north of Titusville, the big place. I can't remember the name of it. New Smyrna Beach.
Oh. Well, you know, when a candidate can talk about the town that he or she lives in, that tells you a lot about the candidate. It means you really care about your community, and that's just awesome. So my last question for you, because I know Danny has given me the head. Oh, he says we still have a few minutes. If somebody came to you and say, Mr. Chang, here's $1 million. I want you to take it and use it in your community. What would you do with that?
I would most likely make the parks better. One, by providing restrooms at the parks. I think that's a must need. For not only for the residents, but there are a lot of new families coming here to Indian Atlantic, mothers with a newborn, mothers with kids, and I think they need a place to be safe. And one of those places to me is a restroom. You know, it has water, it has shelter, it has facilities, and if it's monitored correctly, you know, the police will come by and make sure everything's okay.
I'm amazed that they don't have that right now. I mean, why isn't there more restrooms now?
A lot of it has to do with the homeless, is what I'm told. And they don't want to build facilities that would encourage the homeless to hang out within our city limits. I'm not opposed to that idea, but I think there are mitigation things that we could do as a community, especially on the law enforcement side, to make sure that the places are safe. For example, how everybody can look at the beach every day and go, well, the surf's up. I think we can do the same thing with the parks and put camera systems in parks where the police can monitor if there are abundance of homeless people showing up to use the facilities for free, or, you know, camping outside of the facility. There are mitigation steps that we could take to minimize, or, you know, the safety to residents should that happen. But my priority is for the residents themselves, and a secondary priority would be to worry about the homeless later. My priority is
and for safety too, and the safety. So we have a minute left, and I'm going to ask you really quick. If somebody came up to you and they say, what are the responsibilities of a city council member? Can you tell them in 1 minute or less what those responsibilities are and what you would be doing?
The first responsibility as a council member, in my eyes, is to represent the people, period. Second would be to be transparent in your actions and be responsible for your actions and your words. If you say you're going to do something, do it. I'm not opposed to people saying I'm not going to do something, but there's got to be transparency in their words and in their actions. So, again, my responsibility is to the people of Indy Atlantic. My secondary responsibility is to visitors that come to our city and enjoy the many amenities we offer.
All right, and here's the last thing, your 30-minute elevator speech. If someone were walking in the Atlantic on the beach and you met them this morning, and you want to say to that person why they should vote for Mel Chang for City Council for Indy Atlantic here in Brevard County, Florida, give us your 30-second elevator speech.
30-second elevator speech. That's an interesting one.
Yeah, but this time you'll be on the beach. You won't be in the elevator. You'll be walking on the beach near that place that you're eating from them nice bowls.
I would say welcome to Indy Atlantic, home of people that have character, that are neighborly, and that come together as a community for the right reasons. For myself, as I said previously, I just want to represent people. Whether they're Democrats, Republicans, Independents, we're one community. We have different philosophies, but we're one community, and we need to move forward as one community.
That's awesome. And, you know, you said you were 63 years old. That's the new 43, I want you to know.
Yeah.
Yeah, thank you.
That's right. Yeah, so you're not. Oh, I mean, I'm gonna be 60 next year.
And the secret is curry.
Yes,
just in case you were wondering.
maybe Mel will be. Maybe next year, you know, somebody will be opening a curry chicken restaurant down in India. But anyways, thank you.
I love that. We should have different venues down here.
Yeah, more ethnic.
We do have a restaurant down here that does serve curry. It's good. I love all the venues here.
Like I said, Indie Atlantic is just chock full of fantastic folks, and it'll be a pleasure to see you
elected.
Representing them and elected in the November 8th. Don't forget that, folks. If voting in Indie Atlantic, make sure you're voting November 8th for Mel Chang.
Yes.
Thank you so much.
And,
we have posted.
I look forward to serving the people, and I hope to meet you folks one day, too.
Well, we hope so, too. And so with that, we are going to... take a quick station break and listen to our sponsors, and we will be right back with Marian Ambrose and talk about Green Gables.
Leone Furniture Dealer, featuring the best and most affordable brands. They offer all servicing for free. The delivery, setup, and home, removal of old furniture, and warranty. Work with a reputable and experienced local business as they strive for excellence with their customers. Scotty's been in the mattress and furniture business for 32 years. You can shop online, call, or stop into the showroom to place an order. They are conveniently located inside the Merritt Square Mall and service all of Brevard County in Central Florida. Super savings sale happening now. That's Cloud9 Mattress and Furniture, 321-459-2473. Visit them on the web at Cloud9, that's Cloud9, furniture.com. Again, 321-459-2473 for Cloud9, mattress and furniture. When you need medical care and need it fast, MedFast Urgent Care is faster and less expensive than emergency room. MedFast is open 7 days a week, now with 13 locations, including one in Volusia County. With so many MedFast urgent care centers, there is a MedFast near you. MedFast offers top quality care that is close by, and the number is easy to remember. That is 321-MEDFAST. You just call 321-MEDFAST. No one wants to wait in an emergency room for hours and get even sicker when you get the high bill. What you want is medical care fast. That's why you call MedFast, where most patients are seen and treated in less than an hour. So when you need medical care fast, call 321-MEDFAST. MedFast. Located in Titusville, Florida, Dixie Crossroads has been serving great-tasting seafood, char-grilled steaks, prime rib, chicken, fresh salads, and their famous corn fritters for over 31 years. The menu features the very best local shrimp and fish from Port Canaveral and ranges from low-cost sandwiches and baskets to high-end seafood combos. Visit this Florida favorite at 1475 Garden Street in Titusville. That's Dixie Crossroads, 321-268-5000, 321-268-5000, or visit them on the web at dixiecrossroads.com.
There's something special about the place we call home. It's the place we live our lives, spend time with family and friends, and make our own. At St. Francis Reflections Hospice, we consider it a privilege to care for you wherever your home may be. We put our hands, hearts, and skills into providing high-quality hospice care in your home. To learn more about how we reflect life, love, and compassion, visit www.reflectionslsc.org.
Welcome back, dear listeners. This is Sita Biggie on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here in Cocoa, Florida. We are heard on AM 1510 WWBC, FM 94.7, 99.9, 100.7, and on the World Wide Web.
Yes, on www.1510wwbc, you can get all of our archive shows, Not from the past 13 years, but certainly for the last 2 years, two or three years anyway.
Yeah.
You'll be able to get those. You can get all of our stuff for the last 13 years on our website, cedamediainc.com. And as well, we post all of our shows on our website, Facebook page, as well as the website.
That's right. And so we all learn as human beings living on this beautiful planet. We learn from each other. We learn from life experiences. We learn from education. Boy, we certainly learn from past mistakes, our cultures, and the people that came before us. And our friend Marian Ambrose is here to talk to us today and give us a little update about what's going on at historic Green Gables off Melbourne. Welcome.
Thank you very much. I'm very, very happy to be back.
And there's so much going on. First, Marian, give the listeners a little backstory on Green Gables.
Well, Green Gables was built in 1896 by William and Nora Wells, and they built it as their summer cottage. They had a mansion in upstate New York. Nora was getting pneumonia, so they needed to winter in the south. And they picked Melbourne because the people were so friendly and because the Indian River Lagoon was crystal clear and filled with fish. So they built this beautiful Queen Anne-style home right on the river. And then they proceeded to help Melbourne. They built the first auditorium, the first library, first high school. So we felt it was important to preserve not only the history, but the place where so much was given. Wells Park and a lot of the area downtown was given by the Wells Foundation.
Yeah, and it's so interesting that many people don't know what the Wells family did for Melbourne. And I think we always talk about our show being unscripted and informative and educational, and we give invaluable information. So tell our listeners a little bit about the Wells family and why it's important that we preserve their legacy, which is Green Gables.
Well, Mr. Wells was a metallurgist, and he patented rustless iron, which made him quite a wealthy man. Mrs. Wells was a Stanford. Her father was a New York State senator. Her uncle was the governor of California and the founder of Stanford University. So both of them had quite a bit of money when they came down here. But they were very interested in the community. They were interested in supporting the community. They moved Holy Trinity Church. Mrs. Wells paid for the flowers at the services. They did so many generous things for this community. And they were interested in the politics. Famous people came through here. We believe that he had connections with Henry Flagler and Thomas Edison. They were the first house to be wired for electricity. So there were a lot of firsts at Green Gables. And Mrs. Wells was very interested in literacy, which was unusual at that time. She made it her business to make sure that there were books available to people. The story has been passed down how she actually taught the servants' children to read. So all these things that they did for our community, we feel that they should not be forgotten. They should be preserved and cherished and celebrated.
Especially in today's world where we're seeing so much stuff going on with books, with the banning of books and stuff. I'm sure she would have been somewhere talking about books.
Absolutely.
Because, the house has some books in it. We've seen them. We've seen the bookshelf.
Yes.
Right? So anybody who's been to Green Gables, they have seen the front porch. They have felt that breeze coming through. Tell us a little bit about the home. And Marian, you got involved in this process with Saving Green Gables, and you inspired all of us. I think there was something about you, your enthusiasm and the energy and the positive energy. And I guess you must have done a lot more research than the average volunteer to come to this conclusion that you were going to save Green Gables. And my God, you did it. And it's wonderful. But tell our listeners a little bit more about the house and what was that draw for you, because for me, it's the front porch.
I do love the porch, and especially the octagon porch. We have pictures of Mrs. Wells sitting there reading. We have pictures of the family sitting out there having tea. We know they did a lot of entertaining there. I think the first draw for me was I was president of the Melbourne Women's Club at the time, and we heard that Mrs. Wells had been one of the early presidents of the Women's Club. So I just came out of curiosity to take a look. But once I walked through the house, it was like an enchantment.
Yeah, I don't believe in ghosts, but I do believe in like spiritual stuff. And I swear, Ellen, I don't know if you've been, or Allie, if you've been to Green Gables, but when you go into that home, Nora is there. She's with you. You can feel it. Like, I went upstairs and I saw the trunks and everything where her clothes were, and I saw some of the things still hanging in the closet. And I could feel that she's smiling at Marianne Ambrose and all the awesome volunteers that have worked tediously to, you know, get the donations in and to have the events and write letters to the state of Florida to save this home.
You can feel it's almost like you can feel the history. I don't know if it's the ghost, but you can feel the, you know, or at least wonderment of what, who walked through those walls.
It's a spirit, I think.
Yeah. It is.
Yeah.
So, Marian, let's talk a little bit. I've seen, so you've credited our show, Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, with the turnaround. So tell our listeners a little bit on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. What happened on our show that gives us that little bit of our little, you know, comfort that we did a little bit in helping?
Actually, you did a lot, because what you did for me was you introduced me to Jennifer East. Jennifer East was with Be Unique Magazine and still is. And we met on Sita's show. Yes, and Green Gables was first on the schedule. And I spoke about Green Gables, and Jennifer listened, and she became interested. And so she asked me if she could come and interview me at Green Gables. She came. We had tea on the Octagon porch.
Uh-huh.
And she fell under the same enchantment. She fell in love with Green Gables. And we have become best of friends. So...
And a film. Remember we had the red carpet event?
That's exactly where this came from. After we had our interview, Jennifer said, this isn't enough. We need to do more. So we came up with the idea of doing a documentary. And the documentary is called Forgotten Enchantress. It has won several awards now. We've entered it into film festivals. Jennifer has won awards for editing, best director. I'm trying to think. There's a whole list of awards now.
Yeah, we see them on Facebook every time an award is given out. And so, but you know, the universe came calling that day. There was something about that day and that show that the universe came calling, not just for Ellen and myself and Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, but for Jennifer East.
Yes.
Because she had just moved here. She had just come back home, and she was doing all the films and things and taking pictures and all. And I think Green Gables, she just fell in love with it.
She did.
And she decided that she was going to give it her all. And you could feel it in the film. She gave it her passion for saving this historic building. So when is the restoration going to begin? Because we've seen the pictures from the house the way it was, the way the house is now, and the projected image for the house.
Yes. If you look back in, there's a site called Abandoned Florida, and you type in Green Gables, you can see the house when they first acquired it from the family that they were, the family agreed to let them take care of it and try to restore it. They had cleared the grounds and did some repairs. And then I have a picture up of the house in just recently. We have done quite a bit to make it safe. We've sealed the roof. We've fixed ceilings. We've painted it. And all this we've done through volunteers and generous donations from places like Ace Hardware, Richards Paints, community partners. But we have not done anything towards the major restoration because we were in the process of getting a state grant.
Yeah, and I want you to tell our listeners about that, because that is amazing. I remember getting, you know, that email and that phone call. Hey, Sita, can you write a letter to the state of Florida to help us to save historic Green Gables? And I just sat there, and I just wrote it from my heart, why we should save the green spaces. And then, fast forward now, all of us collectively, we saved it. So give us the ins and outs about how did that come about.
Well, we needed to raise almost $1 million to purchase the house. So we decided to go for a matching grant. So the documentary and a lot of our events and all of our efforts raised half of that. And then we applied for a grant 2 years ago. We applied to the Department of State Division of Historical Resources. And we did not get it. Because of COVID, no one got a grant that year. Everyone was turned in. So we were a little discouraged, but we thought, you know what? We're going to do this again. We updated and resubmitted, and it was like a miracle. We got the call, and we did get the grant. And we were all in shock because... We had worked so hard.
That day must have been amazing.
Oh,
who
my gosh,
got the letter,
yes,
or who got the phone call? Well, because we weren't out there. So we want to know who got the phone call that says, we're seeing all these buildings going up on US 1. Everybody's concerned about congestion. Everybody's concerned that there's nothing going on that is that the whole community can enjoy. And there it is, the vision of the little train, the little trolley. The house is restored. People can have parties and weddings and a board. And there it is. There's that phone call.
Well,
everything all wrapped up in a bow.
It didn't come in a phone call, unfortunately. I wish it had. And I was not the first to know. Actually, one of our wonderful volunteers, she was my vice president, and now she is on our advisory board, and she is the chair of our committee for the grant. Her name is Sue Fallon, and actually she was on the show with me at one time.
Yes.
And she was the first one to find out because she, every morning, would get up and check the website and check all the outgoing memos and things from the Division of Historical Resources. So she saw it before the email came. She found out, she called our secretary, Anita Full, who is another amazing volunteer who has put her heart and soul into the grant and everything else that we do. Those two know. As soon as Anita found out, she called me. Unfortunately, my phone was on silent, so I didn't hear.
And they were probably dying to tell you.
So the word that she sent out an email to the board. So the board knew, and then John Daly, who is our founder and our president emeritus, came to my house and said to me, "We got the grant." That's how I found it.
Oh, so, my gosh, Ellen, this is amazing.
It was.
I think Jennifer could just do a documentary just on that.
And actually, I was telling Allie this story. When I first started my business in 2010, I had gotten an office space, and John Daly was my neighbor.
Oh,
in the office. So I had heard about Green Gables like even before, and he was like, so we had hours.
He was
of
ready to
time.
Go. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Like, and this was in the early days, so it's so inspiring to see something people stick to.
It's like
it
a baby.
And,
it's like a baby. You watch it grow.
Yeah.
You know,
and yeah. and the curiosity, and then the no's. You know, all the no, we can't do this, we can't do that, and then all of a sudden the yeses started piling.
Yeah, and there were so many people that thought that property would be sold and a high rise would go up. And a lot of people were actually rooting for that, but then we weren't. So, Marianne, tell our listeners and Viewpoint with Cena and Friends, where did you find the time? Because you were teaching. You were also with another women's group. And what is your title now, Mother of Green Gables?
No, I'm just one of the presidents. There have been past presidents. I'm just one in the line of presidents.
Well, I think you are the one that made this project come to fruition, you know. So, yeah, how did you find the time? Because Green Gables, all of this happened because of the amazing, enthusiastic, dedicated volunteers. But you made the time.
We have so many amazing volunteers. And I would love to claim credit and say that I saved Green Gables. But the truth is, there are a crew of people that have, John Daly to be the first, who actually found the property and people had jumped on board, like Sue.
Like
and
Sue, Anita. Yeah, Susan Fallon, yes.
Yes, and you know, my vice president now, Yulia. And there are so many people that step forward, and people from the past that they may not be as involved as they were, but they still are, like Carl and Carol Andren, who are with the Historical Society. They are still involved, and they still give advice and help. And Boy
but,
Clark.
But what is it about Green Gables that every time you come there, the volunteers are so happy? Sometimes people volunteer for something, but you go there and you're like, oh, I don't know if I want to do this because these people look like, you know, they're stressed out. Is it the house, the layout of the house, the porch, just that breeze coming through from the Indian River? What is it that makes people feel like this is mine, I belong, and I'm looking out for it?
Well, part of it is I learned my lesson from you. We feed them.
Yeah.
So there's always good food at Green Gables. Our signature cookie is a lavender cookie. You know, so
I love
those. We make sure everybody eats well. But I think it's because we have become a family. And, you know, when somebody comes to visit your family and you make them feel welcome, they become a part of your family. So our family has grown tremendously. And that house just kind of encourages that type of a relationship. We all share it. Everybody feels at home there. When we have our Saturday tours, I have scheduled usually two docents, a greeter, and an extra person. So that's all we need for our Saturday tours. Well, that's all we used to need. Now that our Saturday tours have increased so much, we need more. But I would find that I'd have those people, and I always go every Saturday unless I have like a really important wedding or something. But I would find that, yes, those people were on duty, but there'd be people out in the garden working. There'd be people sitting in the
living room. It's a home. It's home.
They love to be there.
You've come home.
Yeah.
And you have a lot of community partners now, too. A lot of people in Melbourne and businesses are partnering up with Green Gables to see the new house take form and the restoration start. So tell us some of the community partners.
AJ Hires came to visit us, and he has been absolutely wonderful. He is our major sponsor for our Halloween. This year it's called Nightmare on Foggy Bluff. We do a Foggy Bluff every year. It's one of our major fundraisers, and it's the most fun. A lot of people from the community come in to do that. We get a lot of college kids.
I think it's $20 for an adult and $10 for a child. I'm going to buy a ticket to attend.
Oh, you'll love it. It's just so much fun. So he jumped on board with that. He donated a generator that we are raffling off. So he's been very supportive, and all of people from there. One of our volunteers is Mo Carmago, and he works with AJ, and he's been amazing. He started our first antique car show, and we had 82 cars on the property. Everything has just multiplied because of the relationship in the community. I'm trying to think of course, always Ace Hardware in Indy Atlantic, Richards Paints, Third Bridge.
Tropical Greenery.
Tropical Greenery.
And the Marine Resource Council.
We just joined with the Marine Resource Council.
And it's the Ace Hardware in Indy Atlantic, so we have to tell our friend Mr. Mel Chang about that.
That's right.
And you know what I like too is now, Historic Green Gables, you're offering a lot of tours for seniors as well as young children.
Yes, we have an education
program. So, Allie, listen up.
Education program for children, which is a lot of fun. They come, we break them into groups, and they rotate through different workshops. Everything is hands-on. We have, in every room of the house that the children are allowed to go through, we have something hands-on that they can do. And then they either make goat milk soap or churn butter, things like that. They go outside, they play the big hoop games. You'd be amazed. These kids, they come in with their phones, and once they start playing these games, they're learning how to play jacks and marbles, things with good hand-eye coordination. They forget about the phones.
Yeah.
And they don't want to stop playing. So we actually even had to get jacks and marbles at the house because they didn't know where to get them.
Yeah.
So we have a little gift shop.
The house is a living museum.
Yes.
And as a teacher, did you find that your educational background played into that and helped a lot?
It did. I taught Florida history for many years. I was a fourth grade teacher for many years. And I took my classes to St. Augustine, which was a long trip. And it was wonderful, and it still is wonderful to do that with your children. But to have something local like this where the kids can walk in and learn
history.
From experience.
It's living history.
Exactly.
So we only have a few minutes left. So I know I'd like to see a gift shop in the property. I'd like to see people come on that trolley. Give us we'd like to live forever. God knows we would, but we won't. All of us have to leave the earth at one time, and we won't be able to take everything that we love with us. But give us your vision of a person, a family coming to Melbourne, Florida, staying at the Hotel Melby, but saying, hey, let's go over to Green Gables, Historic Green Gables.
It's a wonderful family experience. We have more and more to offer families. Right now when they come, we have picnic tables so that they can bring a picnic lunch and sit down and enjoy the breezes off the river. They go do a tour through the house. When you first walk in, the first thing you see is a dollhouse replica of Green Gables, and the children love it. And we have Mr. and Mrs. Wells, and so we can tell about the Wells family by showing them this wonderful dollhouse. As they go through, they learn different things. We have all the different things, like a model of the first washing machine that they would have used. We have an old toaster that they look at; they have no idea what it is. So we have a lot of things that kids can look at, and they realize, wow, I have it so easy today. Look at what they had to do back then. And it's a great opportunity for parents and children to learn things together. A lot of people don't know about the founders of Melbourne, and that's part of our tour. We teach them about the three freedmen that found Melbourne. The first mailman came, down the river, and that was one of the founders of Melbourne.
Yeah.
It was Captain Peter Wright. So
it's like going to Green
Mailman?
No, the barefoot mailman
one.
Was on land. That was different. The first mailman in Melbourne was Captain Peter Wright, who would go up to Titusville by boat, collect the mail, and then come down the river.
It's like being on a huge park, Green Gables. It's like being on a park,
yes.
So tell our listeners on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends how they can get more involved with historic Green Gables. Give us the website, and if somebody wants to make a donation or they want to volunteer or they want to bring a group for educational reasons, just give us all that information.
We would love that. Our website is www.greengables.org. All the information you can want is there about upcoming events like Foggy Bluff, our Christmas tour of homes. All of that you can find on our website. We also have a brick program where you can buy a brick, and you can have whatever you want imprinted on it. And we're going to build a large patio area and put a foundation for a butterfly garden. The bench will sit on these bricks. So there's a lot of plans for expansion of different things on the property. We have a Facebook page. I think it's still under Save Green Gables. And we post daily all different things that are going on. That's a great way to get information. For the education program, that is also on our website. My number is all over everything. Anybody can call me, which they do.
Yeah.
And it's 321-794-8901.
You're amazing. I mean, there's so many people who are retired and have a couple hours to give, and they give nothing. And there are people who can't give. And here you are, Marian Ambrose, president of the Green Gables of Historic Village Riverview. Right? Yeah, that's it, Riverview Village. And you're giving back so much, and you're inspiring all of us to find a cause or a charity or something to give back. I mean, how do you do it? I mean, you do have a family. You had a wedding the other day. You've had all kinds of stuff, but you still find yourself back into Green Gables.
I am very fortunate that my family is very supportive. My husband, Russ, he's very happy to let me do anything that I want and is very supportive of it. My daughter, as a matter of fact, my birthday was just in July, and as for my birthday gift, she designed a line of jewelry for Green Gables. Actually, that's what I'm wearing now. We have a line of earrings, and there's some ground brick from the foundation worked into the clay. So the white is for the house, the green is for the gables, the gold is for the sun setting on the river, and then there's a little piece of wood that is from the oldest tree on the property.
I'd say package the gold one for Christmas and sell it Christmas at Green Gables. Allie, you have anything to add? Because you weren't here when they came a few times.
No, I'm so excited. I can't wait to go. I just want to go in and
sit
immerse
on the porch.
Myself in it. Yeah. I grew up with a grandmother who, when we would vacation, would take us to historical places and landmarks and all of that sort of thing. So this is right up my whole life alley take a look at
alley.
Stuff like that.
Well, I think and Marian's history in Melbourne, we just found out her husband's name is going to be dedicated with the Melbourne Police Department.
My late husband was Joseph Pelicano.
Yes.
And the new police department just broke ground, and they are naming it the Joseph Pelicano Criminal Justice Center.
Oh,
so
wonderful.
Named him. And at the groundbreaking, I was surprised when I looked and there were my whole Green Gables family was there to support me. They didn't tell me they were coming.
Aww. That's beautiful people doing beautiful things on a beautiful, magnificent earth.
And making
earth.
And creating history for the future generations.
Oh,
that would have never been
so. Let's go around the room really, really quick. One, we got on one, maybe 30 seconds. What would you like to see in the gift shop?
Oh, I don't know.
I want to see teacups.
Okay.
What do you want to see? Earrings?
Well, we have all children's toys right now and T-shirts. That's it.
What do you want to see there, Allie?
Oh, I would like a map of the place, maybe, you know,
history.
The history so that you can look and see, okay, I was in this room and then we went to that
room. Ellen, what about a microphone that says Green Gables?
Yeah, sure.
For the kids.
Absolutely.
And the kids could use
but
that.
But there is so much O'Galley and Melbourne history. It's really important that folks join and find out more about it. So we are going to sign off now. Another fantastic edition of Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. Thank you, Marian, for being here and sharing Green Gables history. Mel Chang, good luck with the candidacy for City Council of Indian Atlantic. And folks, we will see you next week right here on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.